If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56steve.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. This is fascinating. Christina Hunger is the author of Your Dog Can Talk, a step-by-step guide to button training. So here's where I start, Christina, and I love the fact that you wrote this book. I love the concept. I've been saying for years that our dogs know a lot more than we think they know, and now you and others are proving that that is indeed true. What is button training?
Yes, button training is the concept where dogs can use these buttons that are pre-programmed to say words, to press a button down and with their paw and then say a word that they've been taught how to say. It's pre-recorded. So it's this concept that dogs can say the words that they're understanding instead of just waiting for us to say these words that they're thinking about and hearing and understanding.
So let's give an example here. So you've got these buttons, and I need to describe, or for you to describe for us, what these buttons look like, for starters.
So on our floor in our living room, we have about 50 of them, and they're circular paw-sized buttons that have these black tops on them, and they're all in a mat with different slots. So it's like a big grid sitting on our living room floor. And these 50 different buttons all say a different word, and it's about the size of your dog's paw. So my dog will walk up, push her paw on whichever button that she wants to say, and then we hear what she's trying to tell us.
All right. So to be clear about a couple of things, you're a superstar button trainer. Most people would not have 50 of these necessarily. So let's take a more doable number of, I'm going to make up a number because it can be any number. So let's say it's six, and you have six of these in your living room, on your dining room floor, whatever. The dog walks up, presses the button because the dog is trying to convey something to you. Am I right about that?
That's correct. So you're right. Most people are not going to put 50 of these buttons down. But you can start really simply with some basic needs like outside, play, water, eat, walk. And you can still get a lot of really great communication with those and make sure that your dog has always has a way to say what's on their mind.
Why is this, do you think, interesting slash important and slash relevant to you with your personal background?
So everything that I did with this field in button training and starting it all came from my background as a speech therapist. In my work as a speech therapist, I was working with kids who were nonverbal and needed communication devices to talk. And once I saw kids have a consistent, clear way to communicate with words, I just saw their entire worlds open up. Their behaviors made more sense. Their personalities would really shine through. They could form more relationships with the people in their lives. And so when I brought home my puppy Stella, it inspired this question, like, you know, dogs understand words that we say, but they can't communicate with verbal speech. So what if they had a device, a way to say these words that they're understanding? And once I started this experiment, I've found the same realizations as when I was working with kids, that the ability to use words to communicate so deepens your connection and understanding of each other.
Do dogs understand more words than we think they understand? Now, a great deal of it is tone of voice. A great deal of it is nonverbal, because dogs are so good at picking up at these subtle nonverbal cues. Some of it is something or some things we don't even understand, perhaps emitting pheromones even, although pheromones, that's confusing because they're species specific. So how would a dog pick up on our pheromones? But then again, dogs evolved with us. So maybe there's a way they, so some of this, what I'm saying is still a mystery. The bottom line is, and I've said this for years, that I think I've been quoted in all sorts of places saying this, dogs understand us far better than we understand them. First, do you buy into that premise?
I do. I think it saddens me to think historically what we've been saying about dogs. Like, I remember growing up hearing, and actually not even that long ago, hearing the premise that, oh, dogs can't really remember anything. When you're not there, they're not thinking about you. They're just in the present moment. And this just doesn't even make sense. Like, of course they can think of something when they're not there or remember you. It's actually pretty crazy to me to think how much we've been underestimating them for so long.
And what you're also doing is giving dogs agency or choice, control over what's next that's about to happen to them. So, yes, a dog may go to the bowl and bark saying, feed me, feed me. But you have a more direct route of communication to say something such as that?
Correct. So a lot of this does really start with those basic forms of communication of, you notice your dog barking by the food dish, and so then you say, that's a great time to teach the word eat. Then you model eat, you push it a few times, show your dog how they can say it too, go ahead and feed them. And then what happens is, once dogs use words to communicate
I want to explain what some of these things are. So you said you model the dog, but I don't know that people know what that means necessarily. Can you explain?
Yeah, so modeling just means pushing your dog's button as you're talking, because you're modeling how it works, showing them how they can say the word too. So when you see your dog barking by the bowl, you model the word, which means just press your dog's button for eat a few times and show them that that's how they can say that too. And that's the word that's corresponding to what they're communicating.
Do these buttons have their own? It's like on your cell phone, you know, grandma's calling because da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da is the music that, or the sound that happens when she calls. You know how grandma is. You know, I mean, is that how this works? How does the dog know to distinguish one button from another?
Well, so you put the word in it. So when you push the button down, it says the word eat. So you're recording your voice in it. It says eat. And then when you are teaching your dog, when you put the buttons down and have them in your mat, your dog is memorizing the location of each word, similar to how we learn where the keys on the keyboard are when we type or the apps on our smartphones are. So after time and practice, they can develop that muscle memory to where each word is.
Yeah, and you explain what muscle memory is in the book and how it works. The book is called Your Dog Can Talk, and she proves it. Christina Hunger will explain when we come back how to teach your dog to do or to communicate all these different things with you that you would never think that your dog could communicate, because your dog, in a sense, is talking. She will explain when we come back on WGN. The book is called Your Dog Can Talk. You know, a couple of years ago, and it's a step-by-step guide to button training, as it's called. And I don't know how many years ago it was when I first heard about button training. And I thought, this is fascinating, because there's no question, we've done similar things with other species, particularly our relatives, the great apes. We've taught chimpanzees and gorillas sign language, Americans and bonobos, American sign language, and orangutans, as one example. All the great apes have learned this without a problem, actually. And a similar concept to button training, though not exactly the same, has been taught to all the great apes. Now, there's no question there's likely a different level of intelligence compared to dogs, but dogs do have a lot they could tell us. And how many of us have dogs and wonder if our if only the dog could talk? And now, in a way, your dog can talk and communicate at least wants and needs in a way that we've never thought of before. And some of it's really important because some of it may consider, I don't feel well. Something is going on. And previous to this, you would never necessarily know, or at least as early, that your dog isn't feeling well. I'll get to that specific prompt. But first of all, when we first begin training our dogs to do these things, you were talking about modeling. And if, for example, it's food, you say the word food and the button is pressed, but how does your dog know at first, Christina, to press that button as opposed to a different button?
So it all comes with practice. Your dog might pick up their paw and slam down on just any button that they see at first. But what will happen is you'll respond to what they say, so then they learn the power of that word that they just said. So they might not get it right the first time, but they will learn through practice what the response is for each button that they say, and they'll see what happens when you press it too afterwards.
Is that what you do? You press it? Because how do you motivate the dog to press any of the buttons in the first place? Because the dog doesn't have any clue what these buttons indicate that something happens until they begin to do it.
So, yeah, I'm just modeling the words, showing what happens after I say the word. And that's what's really amazing is that dogs have this intrinsic desire to communicate with us. So when they pick up on the fact that this is a way that they can communicate, they do it. I'm not even giving treats as a reward. I'm not trying to get them to be near the buttons and entice them to be around them. But when they see what they're for and how powerful they are, they want to use them and interact with them.
Okay, so let's say the button is I need to go out. You then, you're not going to with a cookie or to feed me. You could do that right there. Hopefully the dog isn't going to go to the bathroom right there where the buttons are in the house. So how does that work?
So whenever we're naturally about to do something, if I'm about to take my dog outside, I would pop over to the buttons, say what we're doing. So I would say, we're going to go outside. And I would press down on the outside button. Time to go outside. Press down on the outside button. Let's go outside. Press down one more time. I would pause, give them about 10 to 15 seconds to process what just happened, give them a chance to explore the buttons if they want to. At the end of that quick pause, I would say it one more time, outside, and then take them outside. So they just saw me use the button three or four times, say the word with my verbal speech, and then they went outside. So they're seeing this cause and effect and learning what it means.
All right, so that is a specific cause and effect, is the way you put it. The dog actually sees or gets something in some cases. How about teaching a more abstract concept like, I don't feel well?
Yeah, so definitely want to start with those easy to teach, more concrete topics. It's just, you're going to get results a lot faster if you do that. Then once dogs do have the understanding of how to use buttons, what they're for, you can start teaching some of those more abstract concepts. So one could be like hurt or help. Anytime that your dog naturally needs help with something, whether their toy is stuck under the couch, you're putting their leash on, you're brushing them, trimming their nails, anything where you're physically helping them, you would be modeling help to teach that that's the word they can say if they need help from you.
Now, you said your dog... Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, it's okay. So, like, one of my training clients just last week reached out to me and said, my dog just said, hurt, potty. And I took her to the vet, and she had a bladder infection that we didn't know about.
Hmm.
So that's where this gets really important, that you start basic, but look where it can lead in the future when you get the foundation down. Like, you can really know what's going on with your dog, things that you wouldn't know otherwise.
But that's syntax. That's language. Dogs are not supposed to be able to do that.
But they have language. Like, they have so many of the same language milestones that come before words that we do as humans. And they have their own language that they use with other dogs too. Language doesn't have to be just verbal speech. So now we're seeing that dogs do have this ability to put words together to make new meanings. And it does challenge a lot of what we thought was possible.
Absolutely true. Your Dog Can Talk, a step-by-step guide to button training. This book is available, well, wherever books are sold. Of course, Amazon among those places. But what about the buttons? Where do you get the buttons from?
The buttons. Our Hunger for Words Talking Pet buttons are sold also in a lot of great places. You can get them on Amazon, Petco, Chewy, Walmart.com, even our website, hungerforwords.com. So they're widely available for you to learn and use.
A couple of quick questions for you. Let's say you adopt a dog. You don't yet have a lifetime of a relationship because that dog is, I'll make up a number, say 4 years old, or you think the dog is four. Mm-hmm. Too late to train?
Definitely not. Actually, older dogs can learn faster. There's probably going to be some adjustment time with a new dog. You're learning about them. They're learning about you. You're figuring out what words you're saying, what they're understanding. But I just recently worked with an 8-year-old foster dog who learned to use the buttons in 12 minutes. It was incredible to
see. Wow. All right. One last question for you. We have less than a minute. What is the most amazing example with your dog or any dog that you've learned? I mean, the one you told us is pretty cool, but do you have any others?
Yeah, I think the first time that I was truly mind blown about what could be possible is when my dog Stella's button for beach broke. So she couldn't say the word beach with her button. So she walked over and said three words, help, water, outside. So she found a new way to say beach because she couldn't say beach with her button.
I have a bigger question for you. If you live in the western suburbs of Chicago, as you do, where is there a beach? That's what I want to know.
We used to live in San Diego.
Aha,
okay. Street from okay. The beach.
That explains
it. We miss very much.
Okay. Your Dog Can Talk, a step-by-step guide to button training. Christina Hunger, I love this. It's such an important, fascinating topic. It's where we're going with understanding dogs. Thank you so much. So what would you do in this circumstance? I'm just driving along. I'm running errands. I'm going to the dry cleaner now. But I happen to see outside a coffee house a dog tied outside. It's about 92, maybe 93 degrees outside. And, you know, sadly, you see that way too often. And listen, 92, that's hot for us, even hotter for a dog. Dogs do suffer from heat stroke when it's that hot outside. But I kept going, go to the dry cleaner, but there was nowhere to park. Instead of driving around the block and looking for a parking spot, I drove right back to where this coffee house was, parked alongside where the dog was, got outside the car, and began to pet the dog, talking to the dog, walking inside the coffee house, saying, does anyone have a beautiful Brittany out here? Did any of you tie out your dog out? No one answers. Only like about 15 people, if that, in the coffee house. It's a small place. No reply at all. So I thought, oh my goodness. I have looked to see the dog tags, to see who might have this. No dog tags, no identification at all. No rabies tag. So what do I do? And I'm petting the dog. I had gotten water for the dog. The dog is drinking some water. Some passers-by with their own dogs come by, and what's going on, you know? And now, at this point in time, I am FaceTiming my wife, Robin, to ask, okay, what do I do? Do I literally take this dog, go to a veterinary clinic, see if the dog has a microchip, scan the dog for a chip, and if there's information on the chip, which there isn't always, that is up to date, contact the owner of the dog. But at that point in time, these two people with their own individual dogs who have come by are now giving the dog water. One had also walked inside the coffee house saying, does anyone have this dog? Is this your dog? Anybody? Nobody responds. By now, about 30 minutes have gone by, plus 5 more minutes added to that where I had driven around the block, that this dog is outside in 90-degree-plus weather. So I'm thinking I'm about ready to take this dog to the vet clinic to see if it has a microchip. And at that point, two guys walk outside the coffee house and look at all of us around their dog and just take, as I said, "Is this your dog?" "Yeah." And then they're assaulted with questions. You know, it's illegal to tie up dogs like this, which it is, by the way. I know that. I happen to write the law for the city of Chicago about this, so I know that's the case. The dog has no identification, has no dog tags, and on and on and on. They just quickly walk away as if they did nothing wrong. So my question is, if I had taken the dog, would it have been theft or a rescue? French bulldogs, lots of other breeds ought to love this guy, Dr. Boaz Mann. He has a special interest for helping what are called brachiocephalic dogs, we'll explain what they are in a moment, to do this, to breathe. And I think breathing is kind of important. So if it's 90 degrees out, as it was the other day, and this is a true story, I'm just walking down the street and I see a Frenchie. And the dog is, Dr. Mann, on the sidewalk, but all spread out, if you will. So its belly is flat on the sidewalk. Its paws are out to the side and looking exhausted. Again, the temperature is what I said it was. What likely is this dog going through?
This dog is suffering from the number one most dangerous animal welfare issue for these dogs, which is brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome. And he was born that way with a short face, which is the brachycephalic breed. And everything in his little head is a problem because he essentially has too much stuff in too small of a space. So if you could imagine trying to breathe through a straw in your throat, have a flap in front of that straw that is being obstructing your airway that you're swallowing every time you breathe. That flap is called the elongated soft palate. And then pinch your nose. So that's what this dog is suffering from. And it's unfortunately the number one most popular breed in America for the last 4 years.
Yeah, the French Bulldog might be the number one. I mean, it could be that that's according to the American Kennel Club anyway, which is a whole different discussion because not everyone registers their dog. And we're not including all the mixed breed dogs that are out there and on and on and on. But they are clearly very popular and in recent years have become, with every passing year, more and more popular. French Bulldogs specifically are fun dogs with a great sense of humor. They're wonderful dogs, but they are not alone, are they, among brachiocephalic breeds? You kind of explained what brachiocephalic is. Can you go a little further in explaining it and why this can be a bad thing? And let me ask one other thing as I'm asking 400 questions at once. So there you are, Dr. Mann in Europe. And you're at some museum looking at the grand art they have at these beautiful museums in Europe. And there's a picture of a person and a bulldog. But that bulldog doesn't have the same structure, the same face, that bulldog that was painted in the 1700s, perhaps, as a bulldog might today. I know I've asked you like 70 things all at once, so I'll let you go.
Sure, and that's a great question. Years ago, these dogs did not look like they do today. Unfortunately, we have an affinity, and there's been studies on this, to these dogs with these big round faces and these big round eyes and these foreheads, because when we see a baby in a baby carriage, there's an instant connection. Oh my gosh, look at that cute round face. The same exact thing happens with these brachy dogs. We are drawn to them. It is nothing that we have any control over. It's that human-animal bond that's instantaneous. And you said it. These dogs are smart. They're affectionate. They're smaller, so they can be in smaller spaces. And they are great dogs, which is what's made them so popular. Frenchies, you're right, are not the only breed of these dogs affected. There's mixed breaky dogs I've seen. The top three are Frenchies, English Bulldogs, and Pugs. So those are the top three affected by the most extreme flat faces. And we've bred them to have flatter and flatter faces because, you know, of the popularity. And that's our fault, and we have to correct a growing problem, and it's not just Frenchies. You're absolutely right.
Oh, and it's not just dogs. Persian cats are an example. Exotic cats are another example. And you're referring to neoteny, the look that we're hardwired, it seems, as human beings, to be attracted to. The problem is then what happens with some of these cats. Many of the dogs that we talk about, and as breeding has become more extreme, we've seen more and more of these issues having to do with brachiocephalic obstructive airway syndrome, which literally means, Dr. Mann, that if it's 70 degrees outside and I'm just having a grand old time, it's beautiful outside. And most dogs, same. But these dogs with this medical problem are, even at that temperature, not always having such a great time.
That's right, because to regulate their body temperature, they have to be able to pant. And when they can't breathe properly through their nose or through their throat, they can't release their heat like normal dogs do. That's why you'll see these dogs, like you described, flat out on a hot day versus you'll see a German Shepherd running laps. So it's a very different situation. These dogs are born without the nice long noses and frontal sinuses and turbinates, basically like air conditioning that they can have in their nose. They have none of that.
All right. So how do you know when you get a dog that is a brachiocephalic breed? And we only mentioned a few. I mean, there's a wide range of others. The Pekingese is one. The Shih Tzu is another. I mean, the list goes on. Not as extreme as the big three you talked about, but the list, even some of the so-called pit bull dogs, you know. So how do you know that you're going to have this issue, whether you adopt an adult dog or you are purchasing a puppy?
If you hear the noise, that that if your dog has to breathe with the mouth open, that's a sign they're likely not breathing well through their nose. If your dog has exercise intolerance, meaning you take them out for a 5-10 minute walk and they're exhausted, if your dog is choking, hacking, grunting, snorting, sleep issues, sleep apnea, has to sleep with a toy in its mouth, the list goes on and on. These are all red flags, the snoring, of course, all red flags of an airway obstruction.
Are some of these dogs likely to, or somewhat more likely to have either temperament issues or not be the temperament? I mean, if you don't feel well, or you're not getting sleep, or you're not getting uninterrupted sleep, you would feel kind of moody and lousy. Is it the same that's true for these dogs as well?
That's without a doubt. I've seen these dogs with chronic fatigue. They come in, they're young dogs, and they look like they just ran a marathon because they don't sleep well, they don't rest well, and your body needs oxygen, and they are oxygen deprived, and they're just getting by every day. They're not thriving. They're not doing what they need to do. These dogs are suffering.
Yeah, and I think that isn't talked about enough. I'm glad we are. The question is, okay, now what do you do about it? We'll answer that when we come back with Dr. Boaz Mann on WGN. We're talking about those dogs that look like they just walked into a wall. They are called brachiocephalic. They have that kind of flat face. They have limited ability to breathe, especially in hot weather. And Dr. Boaz Mann has been a leader in America about, okay, we need to enhance awareness, but we also need to help these dogs. And you talked about when we went to the break that the quality of life, you know, I mean, we love our dogs. The human-animal bond has never been more intense. And one of the reasons why French bulldogs, which is number one on this list, have become so popular is because of what they are at their best. But day to day, these dogs are not always their best. They're not getting uninterrupted sleep. They have sleep apnea. They have all sorts of other issues as a result and just not enjoying the outdoors like they could. You know, I would suggest, and maybe you think differently, but in Europe, we're seeing less and less of this, and we're not seeing less and less of brachiocephalic syndrome in America.
That is correct. I agree with your, I share your concern. In Europe and other parts of the world, they are unfortunately ahead of us with animal welfare, and they have seen certain breeds suffer. And, you know, for example, they are banning these breeds in certain countries in Europe because of these animal welfare issues. So much like, for example, let's say the UK banned decline cats years before other countries, there are places like Denmark where you, I believe, now can have English bulldogs or Frenchies. So the animal welfare issue, although it is a huge, well-known problem in the United States, you know, we have organizations like PETA trying to ban the brickies from, you know, being bred. You know, there's a war now between PETA and the AKC. This is something that we see more commonly in America because there's, in my opinion, less regulation over these breed standards. And it's a big problem. And the problem, unfortunately, is at the top. The American Kennel Club, these dog shows refuse to recognize the changes needed in the breed standard.
Yeah, and even, you know, though some of the breed clubs, and we'll talk about what can be done regarding breeding and what you should ask about before you purchase any of these dogs, it's not the breed clubs greatly, in my opinion, that are the issue, but rather they're the overriding American Kennel Club. Because I think that most breeders, the responsible ones, I'm not talking about puppy mills here, and there are plenty of these dogs that are bred at puppy mills. But I'm talking about the responsible breeders, the home breeders. They want to do the right thing, is my experience, Dr. Mann.
I would say that that's a great thing, there are breeders out there doing the right things. You know, they are breeding the right traits, but there are too many out there that are not, consistent or taking this responsibility seriously. And it is a problem, and it is not going away because these dogs are popular and they're in demand. So Unfortunately, when there's a large demand for something, someone finds a way to produce it.
And it's not only the breeds that you mentioned at the top of the list, but other breeds we spoke about as well, but the so-called designers, some of them, like the Puggles or whatever, you know. So there's a lot of dogs that we're talking about millions of dogs in America. People don't want to see this happen, but they don't know. Maybe they're listening to this conversation, and I hope we'll know better. But if you have one of these dogs that is showing some of the signs you spoke about, what can be done to help them?
So what can be done is recognizing symptoms of the airway obstruction early on and speaking with your neighborhood vet about them, saying, hey, you know, I've noticed these problems with breathing. How can we help? And if your neighborhood vet says, well, you know, wait and see, then get another opinion, because we used to say wait and see, and if the dog really has a problem, and then wait until they're a bit older to see if they really need surgery. And that's what used to happen. And unfortunately, there's a really bad connotation and reputation with this surgery and complications, because we used to wait and see until these dogs were older to correct them, and then they had secondary issues like laryngeal collapse that, you know, were harder to address, didn't have a great solution, and some of these dogs ended up having, you know, life-threatening complications. So early recognition and early intervention is the key, just like with anything. You know, address it at the first signs and symptoms of the problem.
And then surgery is what you're recommending for these dogs sooner than later?
Absolutely.
And is the surgery curable? I mean, will they then go on to live your typical normal life and, as importantly, enhance their quality of life?
These dogs, I have never seen, I should say, in my 20 years of being a veterinarian, just over 20 years, I have never seen a dog transform before and after surgery until these procedures started happening. You know, the dog comes in having a hard time struggling to breathe, leaves, you know, a happy dog after surgery. It is transformative. I can't stress that enough. Having said that, obviously every dog has different potential needs, and they should all be evaluated properly before the procedure, be well informed. But a vast majority of these dogs can be treated with the procedures that we do here at our office, which is the soft palate surgery, the nose surgery, with laser, and do remarkably well because they have no sutures they have to worry about with complications in the throat or in the nose. The laser helps us when we make cuts, so there's less bleeding, less swelling, less pain. So they really have a nicer outcome and recovery, and they go on to living a better life. And yes, we do reduce risk of life-threatening complications.
Yeah. Well, I think this is an important topic. I'm glad you've taken it up. If people want more information, is there? Do you know that there? If there's a website people can go to?
Yes. So my website, which is Boca Midtown Vet, has a lot of information on BOAS laser surgery. My Instagram, Boca Midtown Vet, my TikTok, all have a lot of stories on these dogs before and after, because I want people to be able to see the differences in these dogs after the procedure. And that's why I've been helping to promote this type of story and actually helping veterinarians learn how to perform this laser surgery throughout the country. So it's really a very, very rewarding thing for the pets to go through, for the pet parents, and for the vets to have that relationship.
Yep. I know you're out there because I've seen you do it, teaching veterinarians and veterinary professionals about this on that end. And I'm glad you're speaking now to pet parents about this, to dog owners about this, because it is so incredibly important. Dr. Boaz Mann, thank you, thank you, thank you for all you do. This is really a great thing, I think, for the city of Chicago, and that's why I'm doing it. I'm a native Chicagoan, and I love Chicago, and I love to promote and talk about what's good about Chicago, and there is so much that is good about this city. And that's why we are now doing this, a podcast called Booth 46, live from Petterino's Restaurant. I know I'm talking about it on the Pet Show, and, well, there is an outdoor patio that is dog-friendly at Petterino's, which is right adjacent to the Goodman Theater downtown. But it's really not about pets. It's about Chicago. It's about what's happening culturally in Chicago, specifically The Loop. You can check it out at WGNradio.com or wherever your podcasts are heard. And it's called Booth 46, and I'm so proud to be the host. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN, where I am the host of this show.